Many Rivers is very pleased to welcome for the first time to our Thursday series, Andrea Adler, who is an author, an actress, a screenplay writer, and an expert in spiritual marketing, which is something I could certainly benefit from. So thank you very much for coming to Many Rivers. I appreciate it. And let's welcome Andrea Adler.
Yay. I got a late start in the promotion of this, and only one of the books was promoted, my novel. However, for close to 35 years, I created a methodology that I knew was needed in an industry, particularly the holistic therapeutic community, that was so gifted and so talented and so challenged by articulating their message, how to share their message, how to coalesce all their tools that they wanted to share with people. So I started out writing PR for the holistic healer. And went to all the conferences and expos, and people would just walk by the booth. And I went, now why is that? Well, I realized I had the wrong title. Because at that time period, nobody in that industry was interested in PR at all. So I realized, well, what do they do want to create an abundant practice. So I changed the title to Creating an Abundant Practice. And that's a book that was, the two books now join the one. And then when I realized that this methodology worked for anybody in any industry, I wrote The Science of Spiritual Marketing. Initiation into Magnetism. Because what I realized was, when you are aligned energetically with what your soul's destiny is in this lifetime, you begin to magnetize those people, opportunities, events, and synchronicities that you want to bring to you. And what I have been able to channel after all these years is a process in this two-hour consultation that I offer. Part one is getting the history of people's trajectory from the past and what has brought them to where they are now. And then taking them deep into the unconscious, because we are so used to spinning intellectually of what we think we should be doing and how we should be rolling out our business or our bookstore or whatever our career path is. But it never reaches the deepest place. And I have found that this never fails, that when I'm able to midwife that wisdom that's deep inside and help bring that to the surface, there's tremendous clarity. And then part three is creating that mind map and that yellow brick road that splits the Red Sea and allows people to move very quickly into what they're supposed to be doing and attract those people they need to bring. And it never fails. So it was such a gift to receive this channeled information. I wrote this intro to the book, The Journey of Initiation. Marketing is not only an art and a science, it is a divine practice, a synthesis of interconnected ideas that work in unison with the visible and the invisible, manifesting a profound alchemy. Before any marketing materials, before any marketing strategies, there's a journey to be taken inside ourselves first. It is our connection to Source, the indefinable place where all thoughts and actions arise and subside, where pure intelligence reveals itself and bestows us wisdom and light. And then, as Rumi, the Sufi poet, said, there's a push and another push, the necessary dyings, the ground crumbling that lets wildflowers come up. The initiation into the science of spiritual marketing is not unlike other initiations, where there's a quality of being that takes precedence and a universal plea that invites us to become the student again, where we adopt beginner's mind. When an artist steps up to a canvas, there's a sense of awe, inspiration, and humility. When a composer begins a new piece, there's a quality of vulnerability and openness to his or her listening. To be in the true spirit of initiation, we graciously drop our ego, shed our familiar, and enter a doorway through which reinvention can take place. Once we have taken this step, we find there are blocks to be removed, changes that need to take place so that openings for new possibilities can occur. There are many aspects to this spiritual marketing, but the most impressive quality is how it transforms us energetically. We begin to walk with a different rhythm, vibrate at a new frequency, speak from a place of conviction, move from fear to fearlessness, from apprehension to one-pointedness, from rigidity to fluidity, from ignorance to higher wisdom. And all along the way, we are reminded of Rumi's words, there's a push and another push, the necessary dying, the ground crumbling that lets wildflowers come up. So the initiation revealed in these chapters will not only drive you deeper into your own true nature, it will expand your relationship to your own creativity, your business, and the many marketing concepts available to you. It is not intended to teach you how to compete, but how to think. This initiation begins with you and your commitment to allow the wildflower to push through. I invite you to partake in this enchanting journey of discovery with me. The reason I know this works is I have helped people become millionaires with one idea. When we are totally in alignment with our soul's destiny, this connection is so powerful. And I don't know any other way to reach the depth of that than to go through this process of connecting to source and midwifing the wisdom to the surface. So the clarity is indisputable. So chapter one is the root chakra of PR and why we are so apprehensive to creating a marketing strategy that could bring us the abundance we're yearning for. And that's what used to happen with this holistic therapeutic community. And now there's more and more people who understand the need, the social media piece, the website piece, the marketing piece. But this has nothing to do with social media. This has to do with the deepest part of yourself and the fundamentals of marketing. So it will never go out of style. I never wanted to create a book that I needed to create book one, two, and three, and four. This is all one needs. And if you need a social media person, you hire a 20-year-old. So, for years, I had this gift of understanding how to connect the dots. And while I was working this business and working in Silicon Alley in New York and working on dot-com companies and working with the holistic therapeutic community, there was something bubbling up inside me. And it was a story that took place in the 70s. And this one year in my life changed my life. And little did I know that I walked around that year as if I had antennas high above my head, capturing every single movement and place and time and person and dialogue to be written about at a later date. Until one day I was in Paris after selling a business, and I sat down and it poured out of me. That's pushing upward.
Hmm. What year did you write it?
I wrote it, I started 20 years ago.
Hmm.
And I would have to pause for 5 years because it was such an intense story for me to write. that I had to break away from it and then go back to it. And then break away and come back. Because it's very challenging to write about one story in third person, or even in first person, and be objective to the story when you are 20 years old, and be 30 and 40 and 50 and now I'm 65 and still tell the story of a 20-year-old. So when it was done, I was only 21, even though I was 60. I had identified with the story for so many years that I knew this wasn't just about my story. It was a universal story that had to be told. And so I'm going to read you chapter 1. Sometimes the journey takes us to India, to travel barefoot along the Himalayas, or to Australia to live among the Aborigines. Sometimes the journey takes us to Los Angeles. The year is 1974. Now I'm going to give you the short synopsis of the story, and then I'm going to read some passages. 21-year-old Sandra Billings faces an epic year when she discovers the I Ching, the ancient Chinese oracle, and uses it as her GPS to navigate a torrid love affair, demons from the past, a rape that she remembers, and her life as an actress in L.A. She places an ad in the L.A. Times, drama student in need of room and board in exchange for housekeeping. She meets some crazy, dubious men, a few zany women, and ultimately meets Emma, an 80-year-old... So she places an ad in the LA Times, drama student in need of room and board in exchange for housekeeping. She meets some crazy, dubious men, a few zany women, and ultimately meets Emma, this 80-year-old mysterious woman who she moves in with, and both their lives change. So this is my story, and here's a woman who opened up her home and her heart to a complete stranger. I was 20 years old. I had no support from my family. My mother was an overeater and would go out to lunch. My father was an alcoholic. He was out to lunch. And I never felt like I belonged to that family. So I felt like an orphan from day one.
From LA?
And
living in
from Michigan. So here's a small town girl from Michigan wanting to pursue a theatrical career, came out to Los Angeles for fame and fortune, but really a serious actress who took acting very seriously. And I did end up on Broadway, all because of this woman who gave me so much love and so much support, a stranger, 80 years old. The beginning of all things lies still in the beyond, in the form of ideas that have yet to become real. I Ching. Panic had settled into the crevices of my bones. I'd become a powerless victim of circumstance. I was confused, totally stuck in this moment of complete fear and helplessness. And I had just moved from Michigan to California. Not knowing what to do, I closed my eyes and lay there trying to be comfortable on the bumpy mattress whose springs had worn out long before I rented this apartment. Sandra, you are not allowed to swallow, exhale, or blink until you have a precise plan of action. Not a move. Holding my breath while my body remained rigid on the concave bed, I waited for the top of my head to open so I could receive some kind of guidance, praying that insight into this dark tunnel of existence would reveal itself really soon. My life had become a tragic myth. Not yet suicidal, I was in a state of severe uncertainty and knew that some kind of action had to be taken really soon. I just wasn't sure what. My creative soul burned to express itself in ways that my present job at Martha's Boutique could never provide. My artistic skills yearned to be challenged in ways that no longer included the exclusive talent of selling women's clothes. My heart burned to be reciting the words of great playwrights, keeping an audience on the edge of their seats as I delivered soliloquies from Ibsen, Chekhov, Shakespeare, Williams. But I was stuck in a 9-to-5 grind and didn't know how to get out. I gave myself permission to breathe, but I still couldn't blink. So I continued to lie there, counting the brown watermarks on the ceiling, tracing the water leakage to its origin, which diverted my attention just long enough to allow a thought of genius to slip through a narrow passageway into my brain. What would I do if I were a struggling artist living in Paris? What would I do there to support myself? Well, it took less than 2 minutes to come up with the perfect scenario. If I lived in Paris, I'd check out the Parisian newspapers for housekeeping or governess jobs. I could have a roof over my head, a small income, and free time to paint. I tore off the blue polyester cover, knowing this was at least a beginning to an action I could pursue, and tripped over my shoes on the way to the front door. I grabbed the Los Angeles Times from the doorstep and saw the eviction notice taped to my door. Shit. I decided to ignore it. I waited for the screen door to slam on my butt and plopped the paper down on the old oak table. I tore through the sheets in hot pursuit of the classified section. Where is it? Where's the goddamn classified section? Here it is. I looked eagerly up and down at each ad. Housekeeper, leave out. Live out. Daytime driver, needed for 6 children. Cook for gay couple. Babysitter for triplets. Gardener, cook, driver, wanted for elderly couple. Give me a break. Not one job for a living. I headed to the kitchen, yanked open the refrigerator door, looking around for the jars of peanut butter and jelly, smearing those ingredients onto a cracker would totally satisfy this craving I had to chew, but I was out of both. I slammed the door, returned to the paper. Again, I looked through the ads, up, down, side to side. Nothing. I went back to the fridge, flung open the freezer door this time, frantic to put something, anything in my mouth. I began to paw around for one of those chocolate-covered ice cream. Just thinking of the soft ice cream and hard chocolate crust made saliva well up in anticipation, but all I could see behind the freezer-burned loaves of bread were orange-flavored bars. Whatever had possessed me to buy those? I hated orange. I tore off the wrapper of one anyway, threw it in the sink, and sucked the hell out of the orange coating. I began to pace around the tiny living room. All of a sudden, as if a large chip from a meteor had fallen from the sky and hit my brain, I thought, why don't I place an ad of my own? Duh. I stood there in complete awe of my own genius. The orange coating had melted off its stick and was halfway down my knuckles. So I licked the remaining nasty liquid into my mouth and probed the classified columns to see how the other ads were written. And then I saw it. A sign. Clear as day. Discount coupon for one personal ad. The deadline? Today. Knowing that the next set of letters about to be formed would be the most selection I'd make in life, I closed my eyes, prayed for inspiration, and spent the rest of the morning trying to edit a torrent of words down to 12, which I finally did. And then I, Sandra Billings, placed an ad of my own. Drama student in need of room and board in exchange for housekeeping. So I will never forget what it was like to walk down Melrose Boulevard and see the Bodhi Tree bookstore. I'm sure you're all familiar with the Bodhi Tree. And by the way, the Bodhi Tree is coming back online. Not as a brick and mortar store, but... So I was strolling down Melrose Avenue one day and smelled an intriguing aroma coming from a small yellow building. The quaint little house had been renovated into a commercial store. The wooden sign nailed to the building read, The Bodhi Tree and Tea Shop, Book and Tree Shop. I followed the scent and walked into a magical room filled with books and crystals and lamps and hanging chimes. The Bodhi tree was funky, a let your hair down kind of place where people could walk in day or night and be assured of soft classical music playing in the background. And as you stroll through the store, the fragrance of Nag Champa incense fills your senses, enticing you to stay while you search for the book of your dreams. Hot tea and honey were kept warm in copper tea kettles for customers to sip on as they meandered through the airy aisles. And the salespeople were never pushy. They let you sit for hours, let you get lost in the pages you were reading for as long as you wanted. I felt so comfortable in this bliss-filled heaven. I could have made myself cozy in a corner and lived there forever. Ambling along the aisles that first day, I felt this magnetic attraction to the Eastern religion philosophy section. I gazed at the crowded shelves, studying the titles, wondering which book would call out to me, and noticed a yellow-bound book. And the more it began with a black square on its spine. And the longer I stared at the book, the more it began to illuminate, almost sparkle. My eyes widened as I examined the words, the I Ching, or Book of Changes, written in gold italics. Compelled to take the book off the shelf, I began to leaf through its pages. The words seemed strangely familiar, expansive. I found a seat on a pillowed wooden bench, and as I sat there scanning the thin sheets with their tiny print, the manager appeared at my side. Not everyone can grasp these teachings. They're very subtle. I looked up at her, surprised that anyone had noticed me, let alone noticed me reading this book. Her face was both kind and austere. Her blonde hair in a high ponytail swayed to and fro as she spoke. Then she stooped down to my eye level with her hands on her knees and said, "The I Ching is an ancient Chinese oracle whose origins can be traced back thousands of years. It was used as a decision-making tool by famous emperors and sages. Today, people use it all over the world." "Really?" I was totally impressed with her knowledge and the fact that she was sharing it with me. "The I Ching," she went on, "is based on the philosophies of Taoism and Confucianism. It offers us a way into difficult situations, especially those emotionally charged ones, where at times our rational knowledge fails us. It helps us to get in touch with both our inner and outer worlds, allowing us to make more accurate decisions. The I Ching can do this because it's an oracle." "What's an oracle?" I asked, embarrassed that I wasn't as well versed in the subject. "An oracle translates a problem or question you're having into an image, like your dreams do. It helps you change the way you think about your situation and connects you with the inner forces that are shaping it." I stood up because my behind hurt, and I wanted to continue this discussion on my feet. She rose too, face to face. She continued, "The magic happens when you ask the I Ching a question and it reveals the answer. But what's really fascinating is when it answers a question you didn't even know you had." Intrigued by the woman's intensity, I opened the book to the foreword written by Carl Jung, the renowned psychoanalyst. I didn't want to be rude, but I couldn't help myself. I started to read silently. Carl Jung wrote, "The I Ching insists upon self-knowledge throughout. The method by which this is to be achieved is open to every kind of misuse and is therefore not for the frivolous-minded and immature, nor is it for intellectuals and rationalists. It is appropriate only for thoughtful and reflective people who like to think about what they do and what happens to them. A predilection not to be confused with the morbid brooding or the hypochondriac. The I Ching does not offer itself with proofs and results. It does not vaunt itself, nor is it easy to approach. Like a part of nature, it waits until it is discovered. It offers neither facts nor power, but for lovers of self-knowledge or of wisdom, if there be such, it seems to be the right book. So Sandra uses this I Ching because it's the only thing she ever trusted in her whole life. And there were times when she wanted to throw the book across the room or throw it in the garbage, because she really knew that the answers were always right on, but sometimes she didn't want to follow them. And so you see her go through these experiences of when she does and when she doesn't, and what happens when she doesn't, and what happens when she does. So I thought we would do a little I Ching reading for one of you, if you were interested, to show you exactly the profundity of this book. Not this book.
Did you bring your stocks?
But this book. No, but I actually like to use coin.
I used to do it by the stocks when I first got one.
So if, who would like to volunteer? Fabulous. So I'd like you to, if you have three coins, like three nickels, three dimes, three pennies.
No, I don't think so. I do.
And if not, I'm sure we can find them. But it's best if you have your own energy that you use for your own coins. So who's used the I Ching before?
Oh, I do.
Since 1974. That's what mine says.
1974.
That's when you got yours?
Well, that's when this book was written.
It was?
I mean, that's when the time period for the book takes place.
That's the date that's in front of mine.
So Carl Jung also said, had he had 50 years added to his life, it would be to study this book because it's profound synchronicity.
You know what's really beautiful in that book? The middle section that tells the whole history of it.
Oh my God.
It's so gorgeously written, so beautiful.
I still use it. You know, I mean, I was addicted in my 20s.
Have you read the text? Not the hexagrams, but there's this whole section of
it. Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, I've read the whole thing, like, over and over. I mean, years and years of...
Oh yeah,
In fact, my dear friend, Paul O'Brien, while I was writing the book, I heard about iching.com, and I was floored.
iching.com.
Holy shit, there's a website where you can throw the coin. He created an algorithm to use on the mouse.
I get it.
To create the hexagram six times. This thing was unbelievable. So he created iching.com, tarot.com, and astrology.com. It ended up on the home page of AOL, and then he sold it for $40 million. Brilliant. When I saw iching.com, I cried, called that guy up, and we've been friends ever since. And he knows more about I Ching and Taoism and Confucianism and how this thing works and how about synchronicity and than anyone. So I have an interview of him on my website, pushing upward. And stories of other people who are experts in feng shui and I Ching and human design. And, you know, the I Ching, there'd be no computer today without the I Ching because of the binary system.
Right.
So you have your coins?
Yeah.
Okay, so you keep them and you can toss them on this book. I want you to.
What do you mean, toss?
So I want you to hold the coins in your palm. Yeah, you hold the book. Good. And I want you to think of a question. Now, it's very important that the question you ask is framed in a certain way. So, why don't you give me an example of the question that you would like to ask?
Okay, I want to ask just a normal, simple question.
Okay.
I've been looking for a job for so long, but I have deficits. That's so it's hard. Most people don't want to hire me because they think I'm impaired or something. So, but I know there's so much I can do. And I'm just wondering if the only reason I want one is so I feel more filled. I mean, I have to design every day, and it's really hard to do without some committed.
Beautiful. Thing. Beautiful. So I think, I want you to hold the coins in your hand, in the palm of your hand, and I want you to close your eyes. And I think the question would be, what is it I need to do, or what behavior do I need to display in order to draw the perfect job to me? What is it I need to do to bring the appropriate job to me that would be for my highest? I think that's the question. So close your eyes and really contemplate that question. And then when you're ready, drop the coins, shake them in your hand, and then drop the coins on the book. Shake them up really good.
My hands don't work really bad.
That's good. And then toss the coins.
Good job.
All three?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me get a pen here. Okay, so tell me what she has there.
Two heads. And a tail.
Two heads and a tail?
Yes.
Okay. So we start at the bottom and go up.
Okay.
So take the coins again.
I'm doing it again. Great.
And contemplate the question. Take both hands and cup the coins and shake them up. And toss them when you're ready.
So we have three heads.
Three heads. Yeah.
Straight.
Contemplate the question. Shake them up. Shake them up while you're thinking about the question. Shake them up. Good. Really good. Excellent. And then toss the coins. Don't worry if they fall. It's okay.
Two hands and one tail.
Okay.
Oops, I touched.
That's okay. Don't worry. Okay, contemplate the question again.
I'm not sure. I don't want to get out. Doesn't matter if the question changes in my brain.
Sure.
It
doesn't matter.
Yeah. What is it I need to do to draw the perfect job to me? Again, because they fell.
Two of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what? You can do it on the floor. You'll have more room.
I shouldn't keep my eyes up. Kind of glance back to make sure I'm.
It's okay. You're doing fine.
It's great.
You're doing great.
Going along.
Think of the question. Stay focused. Okay. Yeah. You're good. more times.
Yeah, so I guess we should look at it like it's a fog. We don't touch it, we'll just look at it first. And I mean, and no one knows for sure. Okay. Come in, my question. What do I need to do to draw
the perfect job for me? That will be in my highest, Let it fall. Okay. It's okay. Head.
I'm trying to catch.
That's all right.
2 minutes.
2 heads on a tape.
The third is the same all the time?
No. It's all perfect. Just let it go. Let it go. Wherever it falls.
Move it. I'm changing book.
2 tails and a head.
No head.
Right?
No.
Oh no, 3 tails.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm changing.
Okay, so in the back of the book is something like this, where it shows the upper trigram and the lower trigram. So the lower trigram that you threw is Khan.
We don't have no idea even yet.
And the upper trigram is 3 broken lines.
She gets 2.
You see? 3 broken lines?
Oh, yes. Okay.
So when you bring them 2 together, they come to 7.
Okay.
Got it? So we'll double check it just again. Yep. Number 7. So we're not going to do the changing line.
We're not?
No.
Okay.
Because
do you do those?
I never do the changing line.
It makes it really hard to understand.
The reason is everything changes.
Exactly.
So I'm going to throw it again anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not going to remember the changes. I want to know what's going on right now.
Right.
And what I need to do right now.
Right.
And when I need to throw it again, I'll throw it again. Now that's just me. Okay. Number.
The changes are
hard. I know. I never.
Who's your
talkers?
Thank you.
And plus time wise. So, number 7. So, what was the question again?
What do I need to do to attain a job highest? Not
draw to you the best job.
The best job.
Number 7 is called the Army. This hexagram is made up of the trigrams Khan, water, and Kun, earth. And thus it symbolizes the ground water stored up in the earth. In the same way, military strength is stored up in the mass of the people, invisible in times of peace, but always ready for use as a source of power. The attributes of the 2 trigrams are danger inside and obedience outside. This points to the nature of an army, which at the core is dangerous, while discipline and obedience must prevail outside. Now what I get from this already, so far, metaphorically, is there's this danger that you're feeling inside of yourself that you think is on the outside. However, if you focus on your own discipline, and whatever discipline you bring into your life, whether it's meditation or yoga or eating properly, whatever you can do to make yourself the best that you can be is very important. And the obedience is obeying to those higher principles. The discipline in your life is very important for you to stay steady and in your core, no matter what happens. This will support you in your search. Of the individual lines, the one that controls the hexagram is the strong 9 in the second place. To which the other line?
I don't know if I understand that.
Yeah, well, we're gonna go to the 9 line. We're gonna go to that second line. The one that controls the hexagram is the strong 9 in the second place, to which the other lines, all yielding, are subordinate. This line indicates a commander because it stands in the middle of one of the 2 trigrams. But since it is in the lower rather than the upper trigram, it represents not the ruler, but the efficient general who maintains obedience in the army by his authority. So once again, it's being obedient to the discipline. The army needs perseverance and a strong man, good fortune without blame. An army is a mass that needs organization in order to become a fighting force. Without strict discipline, nothing can be accomplished. But this discipline must not be achieved by force. It requires a strong man, meaning you. It's very, male-centric. To say the least, this whole book. So whenever they say the man, it means everyone.
Right.
It requires a strong man who captures the hearts of the people and awakens their enthusiasm. Have you noticed that about yourself?
I'm not sure if I understand the question.
So it requires a strong man who captures the hearts of the people and awakens their enthusiasm. You have a great heart. You have great, from the little I know you, I can feel that. You have great compassion, you have a great heart. That is a huge quality for someone that perhaps needs that in their life. Okay? So it's revealing the truth about who you are. In order that he may develop his abilities, he needs the complete confidence of his ruler, who must entrust him with full responsibility as long as the war lasts. So whatever is happening in this situation, it's your discipline, it's your obedience to your own inner strength, it's your enthusiasm and your great heart.
It's deep.
Oh yeah.
Because what you said, I'm taking core cleansing right now, which I didn't even know what that meant. Because I have so many issues.
It doesn't matter how many issues you have.
I know.
It's telling you what your strengths are. Focus on your strengths.
I know, that's what I'm learning to shift.
Okay, so let's listen to this. This is the bomb. This is the bomb.
I can't believe I came here accidentally.
Therefore, it should not be resorted to rashly, but, like a poisonous drug, should be used as a last resource. Okay, I missed a beat here. But war is always a dangerous thing and brings it with it destruction and devastation. Therefore, it should not be resorted to rashly, but like a poisonous drug, should be used as a last resource. the justifying cause of a war, and sometimes that war is internal. We have our internal wars all the time. And the war inside of you is, I'm not good enough, I have these disabilities, I have this. It's just words. It's so meaningless compared to what you have to offer.
I don't know how to market myself at all.
Okay, well, that's a whole other story.
You've gotten to that.
The justifying cause of a war and clear and intelligible war aims ought to be explained to the people by an experienced leader.
Could you say this again?
Yeah. The justifying cause of a war and clear and intelligible war aims ought to be explained to the people by an experienced leader. Let's just read on. Unless there is a quite definite war, aim to which the people can consciously pledge themselves, the unity and strength of conviction that lead to victory will not be forthcoming. But the leader must also look to it that the passion of war and the delirium of victory do not give rise to unjust acts that will not meet with general approval. If justice and perseverance are the basis of action, all goes well. You have an innate justice, a right and a wrong. You are not that unconscious to know what is right and wrong. So perhaps there's a war going on, you know, a psychological war, a personality war that you're dealing with in a situation. You know what is just. You know what is right because of your discipline and the obedience that you have to that discipline. So no matter what is going on outside, in the middle of the earth is water, the image of the army. Thus the superior man increases his masses by generosity toward the people. Groundwater is invisibly present within the earth. In the same way, the military power of a people is invisibly present in the masses. You may think you are invisible in certain situations, but your heart is so strong. Your love is so intense. That's why people will hire you. You just, Buckminster Fuller used to say, find the void and fill it. So where's that void in somebody's situation that you can fill? When danger threatens...
I have to remember that.
Yeah, we can write that down. When danger threatens, every peasant becomes a soldier. When the war ends, he goes back to his plow. You go back to the essence. You go back to your discipline. You meditate. You do yoga. You do whatever it is that strengthens your core. He who is generous toward the people wins their love. And a people living under a mild rule becomes strong and powerful. You have a mild rule.
A mild rule.
The way you rule or the way you communicate is mild, is not forceful.
Oh, no.
It's loving and gentle.
It's because I had a very abusive childhood.
Hello?
Yeah.
You don't need to be that way. And it's why you will be hired in an environment where perhaps there's a war going on.
Yeah.
That's where you
And I shouldn't be afraid of the war, right?
No. In fact,
okay.
You're there to support.
Because sometimes people I'm around is like, oh God. But I know they need me.
Hello.
Okay. But it's hard.
It's
hard for me because
I don't get
to be with people I want to be with.
But that's your strength. And you'll find other people to be around that are loving.
Yeah, okay.
But this is your work.
This is my my work, so I should I've always wanted to be around really good people all the time.
Yeah, that may not be the story.
But no, and sometimes I think I got disabled, so now I have to be with people that are on the streets that are this and that.
It's a little angel that falls into their world.
I don't like it, but I like it.
Only a people economically strong can be important in military power. Such power must therefore be cultivated by improving the economic condition of the people and by humane in government. Only when there is this invisible bond between government and people, so that the people are sheltered by their government as groundwater is sheltered by the earth, is it possible to wage a victorious war. So you may be involved in an opportunity where there's a lot of money. And it's their job to support people like yourself that bring in this warmth and this love and this compassion because they need it. Because they're all about the money and they're all in their head.
Because I don't have any money and this is
so
scary.
Perhaps you will be drawing those people who do have money and share it with you. Now, 9 in the second place, which is what was referred to earlier, says...
Did I get 9 in the third
place? 9 in the second place. In the midst of the army, good fortune, no blame.
In the midst?
In the midst of the army. You're going to be in some kind of army. You know? There's different kinds of armies. You know, there's alcoholic army, there's psychological crazy family army. You know, whatever the situation is, just know there's going to be somewhat of an army.
Okay.
Now, we're not talking, you know...
Army.
Just, you know, like what is army? It's war. Really it's some kind of war.
Okay.
It's the war of the senses, it's the war of the personality, it's the war of power, it's whatever it is.
Right.
Just know, it is your dharma.
Okay.
It is your karma to slide in there with your love. Slide in there with your compassion.
I mean, this is perfect for me that it's such a small group, but I hope everyone's not getting it. I feel like I'm taking...
The king, you are, but everybody's learning from this.
Oh, good.
The king bestows a triple decoration. So somebody's going to be very, very happy with the fact that they've hired you.
Is this real?
Yes. This is the bomb.
I've been asking for this, screaming it.
The leader should be in the midst of his army, in touch with it, sharing good and bad with the masses he leads. This alone makes him equal to the heavy demands made upon him. You. He
no,
also
read
needs,
it again, that because
okay.
I don't.
The leader should be in the midst of his army, in touch with it. Like when you're surrounded by this army, be in the middle of it. You don't have to be attached to it. There's a difference between being attached and being in the middle.
Okay.
It's detached. This alone makes him equal to the heavy demands made upon him. He needs also the recognition of the ruler. So somehow you need to make sure that you are recognized in your role. Pause. The decorations he receives are justified. You will be decorated, and it will be justified. Because there is no question of personal preferment here. The whole army, whose center you are in, is honored in his person. That is all. Oh, the 6 at the top. The great prince issues commands, founds states, vests families with fiefs, inferior people should not be employed. The war has ended successfully. Victory is won. And the king divides estates and fiefs among his faithful vassals. But it is important that inferior people should not come into power. If they have helped, let them be paid off with money, but should not be awarded lands or the privileges of rulers, lest power be abused. So perhaps, I do see you in this family environment. There's some kind of war going on within the family. You are there in the center, embracing it. Staying in your heart, being obedient to the discipline, and you will be decorated. Oh, Yama Shrivaya.
Is this real?
This is the real deal. Carl Jung said, had he had 50 years added to his life, it would be to study the profundity of this book. This is Carl Jung. This isn't Mickey Mouse. So, you have a great job ahead of you.
Oh, God.
Now it's your job to look for the void. Where's that family? Where's that situation that you are needed?
Will it be shown to me?
If your antennas are high and you are looking for that role for you to fit into, yes.
I'm gonna go. You've told me too much already. I feel like I need to go and meditate. That's beautiful. I never was into. I've been into everything, but the I Ching.
Welcome. Welcome to our world.
God. I can't believe the reality of this. There's not that many people. I felt bad because there were more people here. But it was perfect for me.
Yeah. It was perfect for all of
me because I couldn't have totally gone into it if there was 9 people here.
So what's your job before you leave?
I'm not working. I haven't.
No. Your job. Not the job.
My job is to keep centered, which I've been meditating since I was 21, but I haven't formally really been doing it. And I keep thinking, I got to get more. I know I'm ungrounded.
Meditate every day.
Okay.
Make it happen. Do yoga every day. Stretch your body. Eat well.
I eat very well.
Then you'll be fine.
And I tried, even though I'm not with people, all the time, I try to just. And I know there's so, I don't, can't drive.
So keep your antennas high.
Okay, keep my antennas.
So you're looking for that opportunity to say, I might be able to help you with that.
Thank you. That's what I never. Okay, I need to develop my antennas. I have to go start developing my.
Yeah, go develop your antennas.
Say something practical. That you don't drive is an incredible gift.
It is, isn't it?
But so many more of us need to not drive.
Many more of us need to not drive.
To not drive.
I know.
There it is.
I know.
It's my gift to you.
Or be the driver.
I'll be the driver.
Metaphorically, you know, like we're the doer, or we think we need to be doing something or doing. When really we just need to be listening.
You know, I know. And I keep thinking it's not enough.
You're enough.
But it's not.
You're
and
enough.
It's not like I used to do 10 things at one time, but now I'm not able to. I have traumatic brain injury. I'm not able to.
You have a gift.
It's a gift, and I have to start looking at it like a gift.
It's a gift.
and can't, instead of been looking for the gift I already have.
You already have it.
I'm old. I'm 60, almost 64, and I keep...
You are young. You're younger than me.
Me too.
So don't give us a hard time here.
Okay.
You're the baby.
Okay.
You're just a baby.
Your heart is young.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
For being the gift to me. Yay! Thank you. See you later.
Take care.
Wow, that was such a gift. Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. So, I hope you read Pushing Upward. It is such a beautiful story and such a powerful... You know, I'm getting calls from 13-year-olds who are going, oh my God, is this what my life is going to be like at 20? And then 20-year-olds are going, this is my life. And 30s, 40s, and 50s are going, that was my life. And then 70 or 80s, they're calling me from retirement communities to come in and talk about the I Ching.
Excellent.
Oh, that's cool.
Excellent.
So the demographic is huge. And that's what inspires me to make the film. It's going to help a lot of people.
The film?
Yeah. I've written the screenplay based on the novel, and I'm now creating a proof of concept, which is a short, bigger than a trailer, to entice a production company to create a feature film.
Send it to Stephen Simon. Special Cinema Circle.
I don't think he's involved with that anymore.
Yes, he is.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's... totally involved. It's his.
Is he here? Is the best one?
No. He's in Colorado, I think.
Okay. That's a good reminder. Yeah, I didn't know he was doing that. I know about spiritual stuff.
Yeah. Just a...
It's a good...
I mean, just one
it's a
little...
good idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He might like this book. Thank you.
The film.
Yeah. We have to read the book, the source material first.
You're making the film?
Based on the book. Yeah, it'll be a ride. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.